actually talked about it on You Betcha on the podcast.
He is an unrivaled source of baseball knowledge.
Anyway, what were we talking about?
A guy who always has your back.
Pants back on, try and make the uniform look sweet in a split second. Come out, and I'm trying to open the door. I'm like, what the? And I said, listen, buddy, put your babysitting shoes on because Dad's going out for Father's Day to go watch Top Gun.
Ryan Roland Smith, every week with Wyman and Bob.
That's the open right there.
That is the open. We're trying to track him down, Dave. We're going to get Ryan on here shortly. Have a conversation.
That's code for his crappy phone is not working right now.
Is that what it is? Is it connection issues? Oh, we've got him. Okay, well, let's find out. He's with us on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. He is Ryan Roland Smith. What's going on, man? Are we having connection issues? What's happening there?
I'll be honest with you. Mike Lefko was trying to help me out, and I will admit this. Usually I won't, but you know what? We need to all be honest with ourselves, especially after this weekend of baseball. I had the – it's called an Ethernet cable, this big blue thing. I didn't have that plugged in. I'm plugged in now. That's all me, man. That's all me. Yeah, we're good to go now.
Lefko is walking you through the process?
No. He was just like, I can't see. I said, hey, whatever you did yesterday, do that. Like, I'm just – yeah, when we did the post-game show, but yeah. No, it's just me. I just figured it out on my own, so we're all good.
Do you set that whole thing up where you have to plug in all the cords and all that?
Well, there's a power cord and an Ethernet cord. One of them was missing. My 4-year-old usually helps me out with it, but yeah, we're good.
Because I break mine down every time we do a show from home. There's the microphone, there's the thing, and I always time myself. Because it's not really a pain in the ass. I was like, okay, I'm going to time myself so I stop complaining, and I was able to get it done and everything packed away in like 85 seconds is my record.
Wow.
Yeah. So now I did it mostly so I stop complaining about it, because usually I look at it and go, oh God, I don't want to do that.
Oh yeah.
So
well, Ryan, what do we say about this weekend? What is there to say? I mean, it was dreadful. It was there was a lot that did not go right. There was, you know, I was watching you on the post game with Angie last night, and you guys did do your best to sort of paint the positive side of things. And boy, they really battled back. They never gave up. And, you know, I kind of get why fans get mad at that, because there's part of me going, I don't want to hear that. You know, thanks for trying for 9 innings. I appreciate your effort for 9. I mean, come on, man. It's like,
Hold on. I'm pretty critical though, right?
And I love Angie to death, and that's your job. You can't go up there and rip them and go, wow, that was an absolute pile of dog patch. You can't, you know, you're not going to do that. So I get it. It's just, I understand in the heat of the moment when you're a Mariner fan and the game ends, and you're just sitting there frustrated and angry. You don't, it's not what you want to hear, you know?
Yeah. And look, not to sugarcoat anything on the weekend, and I was trying to pull some positives out of it. The fact you're down, you know, 8-0 in the fifth, and you claw your way back. And then yesterday, the same thing, you claw your way back. But yeah, let's get real here. That Mariners had I'm not going to say no momentum, but they were not in the driver's seat at all from Friday to Sunday. They were just like, you know, if they're in like a race, they're basically just looking at three people the whole time, just trying to stay up. That's what it was. And I think that, you know, first of all, you know, Bryce Miller on that first night, he just honestly, I'd never seen him look so rattled early in the game. He just looked like a deer in headlights. He really did. And then he looked like he was a little bit deflated at the end of the game. Logan Gilbert was good, but just nothing happened offensively. And then yesterday, you know, with Brian Wu, it was a situation where as good as he's been great, right? And Scott Servais even mentioned this, something to you know, slow this offense down. I think that goes twofold, right? Slow them down in the sense of you know, obviously slow down the momentum they build and all the hits and what have you. But also, too, like when you're facing the team the second time through the lineup and you are fastball heavy, which Brian Wu is, and you're facing an aggressive team that's really good offensively, not an aggressive team that sucks, right? There's a couple teams out there that are not very good offensively, but they're really aggressive. This team, man, you leave stuff over the plate, middle of the plate, early in counts, they're getting after it. So I think that if you have the ability to throw a secondary pitch for a strike, second time through the lineup, that's how you're going to slow this team down. And with Brian Wu, he's so fastball heavy, and this team was just geared up. It's like, all right, let's do this. And they all just came out crushing. That home run to Adolis Garcia was just like, yep, all right, this is how good this offense is, and this is how this is kind of getting predictable here a little bit. So it was tough, man. I'm not going to lie. It was just – there was plenty of fight in there, but there was never a situation where the Mariners were in the driver's seat at all.
Ryan, do you sit there during the game and then, you know, just kind of make notes of, like, what would I have done, you know, versus, does your mind work like that during, you know, if you're the skipper and you're calling all the shots and things like that? Is that how you think about it, or what's your process?
Yeah, I like to watch certain, like, turning points in games. Like, that's what I kind of look at. Like, I'm trying to think back, and I haven't got them in front of me because I haven't got my notepad from, you know, watching the games.
Yeah.
But situation, I'm just trying to think, like, certain at-bats, right? Well, I'll give you a clear one because it's up in the ninth inning. And I'm not, you know, saying that the Mariners got screwed here by any means. But you're facing Chapman, right? The guy cannot throw a strike, right? Situation, and I'm not criticizing the Mariners. I'm criticizing the umpire here for a second. But he comes in. He's barely throwing a pitch out in the bullpen. He looks so shaky. He's not ready to come into the game. And Bruce Bochy did everything he could, especially with a pitch clock, to slow down, to give him as much as they could in the bullpen. He was not ready to come in the game. So the Mariners, if you're on that team, and you can see it from a mile away, right? And I've seen this. I've seen this over my playing days, and I've been that guy where, man, I'm throwing two pitches, and like, hey, you ready to go in? I'm like, yep, let's do it. I'm like, I'm not ready to come in. So he comes in. He's throwing 96, 97. He usually throws 100. Doesn't know where the ball's going, right? And there's two at bats there. I think one was against Haggerty. I think the other one may have been Torrens. There's a 1-0 pitch. Ball's clearly outside the strike zone, and it's 1-1. And you sit there going, man, I'm facing a dude who throws 100, right? Doesn't know where the ball's going right now. Now, all of a sudden, a 1-1 count is completely different to 2-0. Like, it changes the whole inning. It really does. And he did it twice. And so that was obviously one instance where I was so frustrated from an umpire standpoint with the umpire. But There was times throughout the games where I'm like, okay, you better be able to land a breaking ball in this situation. And then tries to throw the breaking ball, misses, comes back fastball, and then just a big swing, and ball's getting crushed. Or, you know, like Jordan Montgomery, for example, he was good, man. Second night, he was really good. And I'm watching him pitch. I'm like, man, if he lands his pitch right now, at bat's over. And that's like the third pitch of the at bat. So there's times that I'll watch when it's that situation. I just think the Mariners, there was just no margin for error whatsoever in those 3 days, and it was tough to watch.
So you bring up Saturday night. That's on the heels of Friday night. That's usually how the week goes: Friday, Saturday. But
I follow you.
Even in Australia, does that?
Yeah. Oh, I thought you guys went backwards.
They tried it once. And some bogan tried it once. And I said, "This is a bad idea. Let's just keep up with those Americans, those Yanks."
But Friday night, even in the loss, we saw a great night out of Jared Kelnick, who, first of all. Yeah. The idea of him working walks the way that he did tells me he's seeing the ball really well. He's not expanding the strike zone. He's not chasing. I love seeing that. Yeah, you want home runs and all of that, but for him to work four walks and a double in that game, and then we played a clip of Scott just praising him, like, hey, I'm glad a reporter brought it up. And he's like, I'm glad you brought that up, and we need that, and what a night for him, and we're going to need that every night. The very next night, he's not in the lineup. And I get that it's an analytical thing, that maybe somebody from the analytics department said, Scott, here are the numbers versus Montgomery. Here's what he does to righties. Here's what he does to lefties, blah, blah, blah. You look at Jared's numbers, they're better against lefties than they are against righties this year. A lot fewer at-bats, I'll give you that. But at this point, Ryan, I'm looking at this team going, you don't have the luxury of pulling out a guy who's hot. You don't have a better option on the bench. When you're running out Haggerty, Dylan Moore, Ford, Caballero. I mean, give me a break, man. You're not the Rangers. You just don't have the luxury of pulling a guy out because the analytics tell you a story. At this point, I'm going lefty, righty, don't care. Give me my best nine. Give me my best nine and run them out there.
Yeah, look. Okay, first of all, just to your point in regards to all the righties you saw in the lineup, like eight of them, right, besides J.P. Crawford. So you could tell Scott Servais was doing anything he could to get a righty full lineup, right? So just to – on the analytical side of this, okay, I'll just throw some stuff at you here real quick. From Jordan Montgomery, who, by the way, has been dealing besides two outings, okay? So I'm going to put my propeller head nerd hat on here.
It's a nice visual.
Yeah, just for a second. All right, so you look at what – righties have done. They're hitting 357 off Jordan Montgomery's fastball. Okay. They're hitting Yeah, sinker, and that doesn't sound like a lot. 212. The changeup, they're crushing the changeup, 450. So his other weapon there is that curveball, which is lefties, righties, doesn't matter. Then you look at lefties against him. Now, again, I'm going to agree with you here, so just bear with me. And if you're listening out there, don't start driving off the side of the road.
Here come the texts. Here come the texts.
Oh, yeah. Now, when you look at lefties, what lefties have done against Montgomery, not good. Fastball, non-existent. Sinker, they're hitting 100. Changeup. Like, not non-existent, a lot of these numbers, okay? Mm-hmm. Now, again, I'm just throwing some basic analytical numbers at you.
Right.
But to your point, when you watch Jared Kelenic have that at-bat, for example, I'll use one at-bat. And then, by the way, he had like a 450 on-base percentage for the last eight games going into that game, by the way, that second night. And he wasn't playing. You have to go with your gut a little bit. I totally agree. When you have a situation where Aroldis Chapman – he's trying, and that first time, and again, I was referencing early in the chat about the third night, but the first night, you got Aroldis Chapman, left on left, throwing 100, a lot of sliders, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Kelenic could see that like a beach ball. It was crazy. He was seeing those pitches from an absolute mile away. So I agree with you. If you have a kid in Jared Kelenic who, by the way, is still stinging the ball coming back from his injury in the limited playing time he's had, left on left, I get it. And not many teams put lefties up against Jordan Montgomery. I'm sure if Scott Service, if he wanted to, could throw 1,000 numbers your way and say, look at this. But I agree with you. You don't have the platoon to take Jared Kelenic out of the lineup. If you had let's say you had a Dylan Moore who was hitting 250, a bunch of home runs, hard hit percentage through the roof, and just on base percentage through the roof. Sure. All right. Take the lefties out. Let's platoon him here. Mm-hmm. But you don't have the bench for that. I agree. I 100% agree. I agree with you. But from an analytical standpoint, I get it. But man, situation where you watch the game the night before and what he has done, what he did recently against lefties, it's a situation you second guess it. But again, these guys have so many different numbers that we don't have, and different, you know, they're around those players. They look them in the eye every single day. Scott Service knows those players way better than, you know, you and I ever will, to really sort of make that decision. And he wasn't, I think he was asked about it after the game, and he was, you know, pretty, put his foot down and said, this is what it was. In a situation like that, usually Scott Service is pretty honest and say, "Oh yeah, yeah, good point. Maybe I should have." You know what I mean? But he didn't. They had their reasoning for it. But yeah, it was interesting.
Hey Ryan, is it in Major League Baseball? Is it about matchups? Because I'm just looking at and I don't know how I want you to answer this one, because what, we're 8-2 against the Astros, but 1-8 against the Rangers. And I was just looking at the Astros just got swept by the Royals. They're the hottest team in baseball right now. 9 out of the last 10 they've won, and they beat them, what, I think 5 out of 6 games, the Astros, that is.
Yeah.
The Royals have been, they just kind of have their number, and I think we kind of have Houston's number, but the Rangers really have our number. Is that, do you think it's about individual matchups, you know, just how it plays out, or is it just,
I think it's a combination of it. I think, well, a little bit of coincidence, maybe. You run into a team, for example, the Astros, last time they faced them was in Houston. They ran into a red hot Mariners team that everyone was just big smiles on their face, just crushing baseballs left, right, and center. And the only issue you had then was if you know, offensively was, you know, oh man, Julio hit a double this time, not a home run. Like, you know what I mean? That was the biggest thing you're upset with. That's how hot they were. It was crazy. And that's what the Astros ran into down in Houston. So sometimes it's timing. You go back, even the Texas Rangers. I know the Mariners looked really bad against them this weekend. But you even go back to what they did early in the year when the Rangers, that was when they were 40 and 20. So some of it's timing. I think with 26 guys on a roster, it's more than just, you know, oh, hey, look, we're just simply a better team. Sometimes it's psychological. Framber Valdez, he's filthy. The Mariners ran into him right at the end of his run, where he was just struggling. He just couldn't. He wasn't consistent. And then all of a sudden, he cleaned it up a little bit, and he's been better. But for example, they're going to face Verlander tonight. Okay, so Verlander he's not the same dude we saw last year. He's not the same guy who won the Cy Young last year. That's plain and simple. But when you look at this, look at the time of year it is. The team that's been there a bunch, right? The Houston Astros, been in this situation before as well. You got Verlander, Christian Javier, Framber Valdez. This is not going to be easy at all. Regardless of what has happened in the past, this is going to be extremely tough these next 3 days. And everyone who says, oh, well, they just got swept by the Royals, they're good. Maybe the Astros are facing, dealing with, three key guys who are just absolutely, slumping right now. Can't see a baseball. Maybe so, but it's still going to be tough. And sometimes with baseball, man, as a hitter, it just takes that 1-2-0 pitch, middle of the plate, you get that swing off, you're like, oh, there it is. All right, I'm back. Mm-hmm. You talk to hitters about that all the time. They're like, man, I just need to see something up. And then they watch that ball just carry in the air. They're like, oh, I'm good. All right, let's go. And so it's going to be a tough run for sure the next 7 games.
Hey, Ryan, I've heard a couple people talk about, hey, they should have switched the rotation up so that you would have had Luis Castillo going against the Rangers. And I get that. And on the surface, I totally understand that. But I don't think you go at it saying, all right, we need the rookies to go against the A's. That'll be an easier – it would be an easier landing spot, certainly. But I don't think you could take those games for granted that, okay, we'll be fine with them going here, because the A's had just taken 2 of 3 from the Astros. The Dodger series was a disaster, and you were coming out of that. To me, you needed those A's wins. You had to get the ship righted right there and assure yourself of some sort of momentum going into Texas. So I don't know that would have been the right idea, I guess, is my point. What are your thoughts about, hey, they should have adjusted the rotation so that, the two rookies weren't going in this Rangers series?
Yeah, when you look at it in hindsight, you're like, man, what a bad matchup. It really is. But at the same time, in this next stretch, you still have a situation here in this next stretch of games, and I've got to sort of play it out when I'm looking at this weekend and say, put it this way, if you're looking at pre-Oakland A's series, switching up the rotation, or essentially having someone go on short rest, In my opinion, it's a little bit early to start messing with that compared to this next stretch of games. I do think that you will see some sort of adjustment here. I'm not going to be shocked, but it'd be interesting to see if Brian Wu goes against the Rangers again.
It sounded like that was Scott after the game, right? How he phrased it.
Well, he said after the game, when he makes his next start against the Rangers, I'm like, what, you mean 2024? Nothing. Brian Wu's been great, but it's a situation, man. This comes down to just straight 9 innings. Like, this is it. You know what I mean? Like, it's going to come down to that this last weekend. It is literally going to come down to the last 4 games. It's going to come down to every single inning. So look, if Brian Wu goes out there, it's short leash, in my opinion. But I think manipulating the rotation, I haven't gone back to sort of look how you could map it out. And again, the other thing is too, I think a situation like this, right? So who's going tonight? Luis Castillo is going tonight. Yep. Then tomorrow you got who? George Kirby.
George Kirby.
So and I'm just trying to think who. Man, I just haven't got it in front of me. My computer is I'm on dial up at the moment. I'm trying to look at the rotation here and see how it shapes out. So you've got
I think Castillo. It goes Miller would be next, right? Doesn't it go Kirby, then Miller?
Yeah, I think it goes Miller. And then you've got, after that, you've got Logan. Man, so, yeah, there's really no way around it now when you think about it, to try and get one of these three guys, to back it up. Because Luis and Kirby, correct me if I'm wrong here, you've got Luis Castillo going on what is it? Sorry, not Luis Castillo.
He's going tonight, followed by Kirby, Miller, Gilbert, Wu, then Luis again, and then Kirby in the finale. Is how it's laid out right now.
Yeah, okay. Man, I think if the way it rolls out right now, there's really no manipulation. I don't think you can really change it around unless you do something with Brian, that start with Brian Wu, or he's just on a really short leash. But I get it, trust me. I get it, and especially in hindsight, looking back, man, look at these matchups right now with Bryce Miller and Brian Wu. But they've been good too, man. They really have been good. I get it. I mean, Brian Wu has been dominant against the Angels and the A's lately. Didn't match up well against the Rangers. But I think it's, again, you've got Castillo, Kirby, those last 2 games. I think that's how you want it to play out anyway.
All right, real quick. Just I've been incredibly pessimistic lately. Like, I was like, there's no way the Seahawks are going to go into Detroit and win. And then the other night, I was like, there's no way I'm going to find my car keys. And my wife was like, they're probably in the car on the front seat. I told that story earlier. Yeah, I'm just very pessimistic right now. And I don't feel good. I don't feel good about I was happy and thinking great things going into the weekend. But what's kind of your gut feel here when you look at, you know, Houston and Texas? I mean, are those two totally separate? Are you thinking not so great things against the Rangers? I mean, I don't know why you would, because you've only got one win against them, but what's your feeling?
Man, glass half empty at the moment. And I hate to say it. Look, they're coming back to Seattle. It's been a long run, man. The month of August and September have been draining on this team. It really has. Mm. I think that, you got Verlander tonight. Sometimes he can take it up a notch. And you can look at numbers. We talked about this with Kelnick. Hard hit rate is through the roof lately. You know, his time with the Houston Astros. The secondary pitches are just not the same as last year. All that stuff. But you know what? The dude literally has a start or two left. And he wants to go to the playoffs. And he wants to be the guy. And he's so all these little things. You can throw the stuff out the window. It's going to be really tough tonight. And, again, two or three of the Houston Astros, you are in business. But, man, if you get off to a situation like you did in that first game, there's no bullpen collapse with the Houston Astros either, by the way. If you get down early, that bullpen is way tougher than what we saw with the Texas Rangers. So I am a little bit, you know, as my sister used to call me, Negatron, like, you know, Megatron from Transformers.
You're Negatron.
Yeah, I've got that mindset right now. But I'm hoping, look, get game one tonight and they're in business, but man, it's going to be tough, put it that way.
Hey, really quickly, we're up against the break, but I got to ask you, twice in recent games, we've seen Julio on second, the ball's hit in front of him.
Yeah.
This is Little League rules. The ball's hit in front of you. You don't run to third. Right. But he's done it twice. Is that just a guy trying to make something happen? Is that a philosophy that I'm not aware of with it? What is he doing? What is that?
That's trying to do too much, straight up. And a guy who wants to, you know, we know about this all the time, right? He wants to be just above and beyond, carry the team and be the guy. He wants to be the guy.
Yeah.
Look at what he's done recently. He struggled, right? Like, it's been the last, what, nine games, he's hitting .211 right now. He got two hits yesterday, but before that, he only just got a bunch of singles and a double before this Texas series. So, you know, just trying to do too much, just trying to push it. And the other thing is, too, you're in that ballpark down there psychologically. You know, you're trying to scrap and claw for any run you can get. Just the guy's just trying to do too much. That's what that is.
Negatron. I love it. I love it.
I like that your sister.
I can't believe I said that on the radio.
Is your older sister or younger sister?
Older sister.
Okay.
She has stopped being a Negatron because, like, I used to be a big Transformers fan. I loved them back in the day. And, and Megatron's a bad dude, right? And I was always super negative. Sure.
Brian, you gotta tell Dave some of the stories you told me off the air about your family, how they just love busting, like his mom saying, throwing comments at him, his sister throwing comments at him.
I got my mom in town right now. I got my mom. She's in the other room right now, listening, probably shaking her head.
She's going to tell you everything you did wrong in this interview.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I love it.
Ryan, we always appreciate it, my friend. Thanks so much, and we'll talk soon.
Sounds good, guys. Thanks, you.
Ryan. There you go. Ryan Roland Smith with us each and every week. If you missed any of that conversation, it'll be available on the podcast page after the show at seattlesports.com. All right, coming up, the Seahawks offensive line depth might be more impressive than we initially realized. We're going to get into that coming up. It's Wyman and Bob on your only home for the AL West race, Seattle Sports, and the Seattle Sports app.
Wyman and Bob.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On Seattle Sports.
Our thanks to Ryan Roland Smith, who joined us in the previous segment, in case you guys missed that conversation. Again, it will be on the podcast page after the show at seattlesports.com. Just click the podcast tab, scroll down to our picture, click on that, and it's right there waiting for you after the show each and every day. What do they do next, Matt?
Boy, that's a great question, Bob.
I got him.
Something, probably.
You're right. They do something. They subscribe. click subscribe.
Ah, how could I be so foolish to forget such an important step?
That's a great answer. Well,
it's a great answer because it's not wrong. Yeah, you do something.
Yes, as Matt just told you, click subscribe. That's the key to the whole thing on the podcast. Meanwhile, Seahawks get a big win, and they did it with a lot of starters down, especially on that offensive line. You went in. Obviously, the two tackles were out, and Abe Lucas, who's on the IL, and Charles Cross. I didn't even know anything was going on with Phil Haynes. I guess I didn't look at the injury report because I got up to the press box, and they give you a list of the inactives, and I saw his name on there, and I'm like, what?
Yeah, that was a surprise too. I didn't know that was coming. And then what'd we get? Anthony Bradford?
Yeah. Bradford was in there, the rookie from LSU, right?
Yeah.
LSU. So
fourth or fifth rounder.
He was in there. So you had two starters. You had Evan Brown at center and you had Damian Lewis at guard.
And he missed a few snaps. I think he missed eight.
Well, and you brought up a guy that I didn't even know was on the roster that got into the what's his name again?
Ben Brown. Yeah, he got eight snaps in there when Damian Lewis. I don't know what Damian had. It was it him or Anthony Bradford?
One of them hyperextended a knee. I saw him like as they fell back. You saw the knee kind of hyperextend, and they hopped up and were holding their knee. And I don't remember if it was Lewis or if it was Bradford.
I'm pretty sure that was an ankle tweak.
Oh, the way they jerked their leg, it looked like whatever. But yeah.
Who came off the field holding their hand? Was that Damian Lewis?
I think that was Lewis.
Yeah,
that was Lewis. Yeah.
I thought that he like dislocated a finger or something like that because he came back in. But I don't know what. We'll find out today because we're going to talk to Pete Carroll. We're not going to talk to him. We're going to hear from him at 4:00. But yeah, I just thought this was incredibly impressive, and especially, you know, you brought up the numbers on first half versus second half, just night and day. And, you know, it started off poorly, and then it got better. It got better, and I felt way better. What were some of the numbers that you had there?
So, yeah, first half, I mean, to say night and day is an understatement because it really was. First half, they go into the half trailing 13-12. They were 1-for-8 on third downs.
Right.
They were 0-for-3 in the red zone. Geno was 11-of-23 for 153 yards and a pick. It was a bad first half for him.
Both sacks that he had.
Yeah, first half.
Came in the first half.
Then the second half, Geno's 12-of-13, 143 yards and a touchdown. They go 3-for-3 in the red zone. They go 2-for-5 on third down conversions, and they score 25 points. I mean, just a completely different set of circumstances in the second half.
Well, and especially, I don't know, I just feel like you start off that way. I guess you could say it couldn't get worse, right? But, you know, the way that they improved with a bunch of backups, it just leads me to believe that I think Shane Waldron, the offensive coordinator, is really in a flow right now. I mean, I think he's using guys the best they can. I also think that Geno is just a good quarterback. He's able to, you know what that shows is he's able to snap out of it, right? I mean, you get in a funk sometimes and it just lasts the entire day. So and we heard that from a couple of different guys that Geno's a hothead and he reins it in, he controls himself. And I was just very impressed by that. So that, you know, and the defense too. I mean, we had more than our share of injuries, but I thought this was a really good sign that they were able to just keep running that. And, you know, go back and look again, but it just seemed to me that it looked like they got more complex. They were running all kinds of different formations and
which goes
like
against
that.
Your natural way of thinking, like, all right, they got backups in there that you're throwing. You got three of them on the line. Let's simplify it, make it easy for them.
Well, and it's a lot of stuff, you know, and they didn't have Will Dissly either. And he's a great leader out there. So, yeah, it was very impressive what they did. And I feel like that's, you know, probably one of those really good examples of a good coaching mm-hmm. job. So,
well, speaking of coaches, and you mentioned we'll hear from Pete Carroll coming up at 4:00. He was on this morning with Brock and Salk and talked about how impressed he was with how they neutralized what he calls a very good defensive line.
To come back again this week, and Brian Burns is a pretty darn good player out there. We didn't even hardly see him. He already was a factor. And the kid last week, you know, top pick in the draft or something, those guys didn't even factor into the game. The uniformity of our play, regardless of who's in there, that's pretty freaking special now.
That's Aiden Hutchinson, Pete. He's talking about. I love that. I love that he's like, I'm not quite sure of his name. He's a really good player.
That kid, top pick in the draft, kid.
Because he's got his own guys to worry about here. Yeah. So, but yeah, I love that. It was. That was the other thing I was going to say is that that was maybe their numbers aren't great defensively, but you look at that front seven, they're really good.
And that's where the numbers are really good.
Yeah.
You know, and just in terms of stopping the run, what they needed to fix seems so far through three games to be fixed. Yeah. Three games, but it looks good.
Right. Yeah, and they were without Shaq Thompson, but I think Deion Jones is a really good football player. So he filled in nicely. And, yeah, you did it against them. I mean, look, you saw a couple of – I mean, Brian Burns on that one pass rush where he beat Stone Forsythe inside. I mean, that was pretty bad. You got beat pretty bad there, but that's also a really good football player. So, yeah, I feel like that made me feel really good about this offense going forward. And you didn't even really get JSN that involved.
No.
You know, and you probably could have gotten – I'd like to see Zach Charbonnet start to get some more reps and some more carries. And he looked really good. And I just loved his physical nature, both him and Walker. And then Walker, you know, more than any other guy I've ever seen, he his feet and he's like – very twitchy, and it's like he's kind of dancing around a little bit. And you think usually when you do that, you get tackled for a loss or 1 yard gain, and he's able to turn that into positive. So his decision making, I think, is really good.
I still love that he stuck the landing, put the arms out.
I'm glad you noticed that, man.
That's hilarious to me.
I thought that was a really great moment in that whole game because the entire crowd. So as you described, he's twisting and turning, and I think he did like a full 360.
Yeah.
Spins out of a tackle, and then he lands on 2 feet on the sidelines and then puts his hands
like,
up in ta-da. The air. You're right, just like a gymnast.
Yeah, I landed it.
And everybody just started cheering. And
it was hilarious. That really good. And then one, I don't know how many people saw it, but on the PI on Witherspoon, Pete Carroll lost his mind, as he should have. That was a garbage call. But he came charging down the line, and he's so animated, and he takes his gum out of his mouth, and he spikes it on the ground. It was as mad as I've seen Pete Carroll. I mean, to take the gum out and spike it
was
hilarious.
I love it. I love when Pete gets fired up. And I thought he was going to get flagged.
Oh, man.
I really
did.
He
was steaming on that one.
I thought at one point he almost like made contact with the guy. And you know, you have to say, I mean, crappy call. But the NFL officials, they take a lot of heat. Oh, and I love that.
They're very unbaseball-like.
Yeah.
And I mean that in the best way.
Well, and the side judge was just trying to reason with Pete. And he was staying very calm. I got to figure out who that guy is, and we got to give him some kudos because that was amazing that he didn't, you know, throw a flag, which he shouldn't. That's just the toughness, I think, of football, you know, that they're not quite as sensitive.
It's a very funny visual, though. All right, coming up, a very busy weekend for college football coaches getting mad at people. We're going to dive into all of that coming up with Wyman and Bob on your home for the Mariners playoff hunt, Seattle Sports, and the Seattle Sports app.
Wyman and Bob.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
Coming up at 4 o'clock, we'll turn you over to the Pete Carroll press conference. Meanwhile, it was a big weekend in college football, Dave. I'm not sure how much you had the chance to take things in, but some angry coaches out there. First of all, Ryan Day, the head coach of Ohio State. The Ohio State played Notre Dame, beat Notre Dame, and apparently, Lou Holtz, I didn't even know he was still doing pregame shows or whatever, but he predicted that the Fighting Irish, is obviously he has an attachment there, would win. And you know, and he gave explanations as to why. And apparently, Ryan Day didn't really like that.
You know, like, I'd like to know where Lou Holtz is right now. What he said about our team, I cannot believe. This is a tough team right here. We're proud to be from Ohio. And it's always been Ohio against the world. And it'll continue to be Ohio against the world. But I'll tell you what, I love those kids, and we got a tough team.
I was like, how do you get that worked up over a pregame prediction by anybody, much less Lou Holtz, who obviously has some feelings about Notre Dame, his time there as the legendary head coach. And I didn't hear exactly what he said, but I don't think he said, well, Ohio State stinks. They got no business being in this game.
Well, it sounds like he talked about the toughness part of it. You know, I suppose that's one of the things. But is it Lou Holtz like 140 years old?
At least 117.
Yeah. Plus those 40 other years, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, come on, man. That's interesting. And also, maybe I haven't seen Ryan Day enough, but I don't remember seeing him get that emotional. scream and yell.
He was fit to be tied.
Yeah. Haven't heard that in a long time.
All right. So there's he was very fired up. And obviously that's a point. I'm sure he used that in the locker room. And
oh, yeah. Motivate your team.
Yep. Told the team Lou Holtz thinks we stink and you guys shouldn't even be wearing uniforms and you should go play softball.
That right? is such an old school thing. I just remember Joe Sellers, my coach at Wooster High School, they hate your mothers. You know, they they door ding your cars. I mean, everything came into play and it was always. And I was always kind of like, yeah, fired up. But then there's a lot of times I'm like, no, they didn't. That never happened, Joe. Come on. So yeah, that was that. I guess they're college kids. They can get fired up. I don't think that stuff works necessarily at the NFL level. But
yeah.
Yeah. I mean, poor Lou Holtz. He's just sitting there, you know, doing his pregame show, right?
I guess. I honestly didn't know he was still doing.
Well, he's probably asleep. I think, no, he came on asleep? As like a guest.
He was in like a recliner show. Chair.
Yeah. It was either Pat McAfee or Game Day. And he questioned Ohio State's toughness. They have faded down the stretch last couple seasons. But the fact that you pull off a huge win like that, dramatic, impressive win, and your first thought is, I'm going to call out this man who is most definitely asleep because it's 1 a.m. on the East Coast.
Yeah, I want to know where Lou Holtz is right now. He's sleeping. That's where he is.
Yeah, you're right. They do the whole thing from, they've got like a little fireplace setting.
Yeah,
and
he looked like
recliners.
He was getting ready to doze off as he made that prediction.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Jake Dickard got a little sideways with Lee Corso after Wazoo came up with the win.
I was watching Game Day. Corso comes on and he says, the no one watches bowl, you know, and I don't really understand it. What's the merit once again? Because the facts say people watch the Cougs, and the people watch the Cougs more than every team that's left over in the Big 12. Okay, it's well documented what ESPN has done to try to get our league and to where it's at. And I would love to have a conversation with Coach Corso about, you know, the value that he sees in breaking up the premier West Coast Conference. Okay, and I'd also love to have a conversation with Coach Corso about how he thinks, you know, student athletes and mental health and flying them all over the country is a positive thing. I'm open to those conversations.
Yeah, I like Dickert, but yeah, I'm not sure why you would. I mean, look, I'm not saying that everybody who says something like that is looking for a response. I mean, that's typically what you get on Twitter, right?
Yeah.
You want people just anything.
Yeah, you're throwing a grenade out there.
Yeah.
Just letting it blow up and everybody responds.
Yeah, I like Dickert. I think he's a good coach. They're 4-0.
Yeah.
They're second in the Pac-12, but there's only four teams. No, that's to come later. But yeah, go Cougs, man.
And this is the one that got everybody. And now, obviously, this is the most hyped game. It was Oregon. It was Colorado. Deion Sanders has been the face of college football to start this season and, you know, pulling off upsets and all that. And they play this pregame talk from Oregon coach Dan Lanning. And the way it took off on social media to me was really weird, and in the way some people heard it. But here's what he said.
Rooted in substance, not flash. Rooted in substance. Today, we talk with our pads. You talk with your helmet, right? Every moment. The Cinderella story is over, man. Right? They're fighting for clicks. We're fighting for wins. There's a difference, right? There's a difference. Right? This game ain't going to be played in Hollywood. It's going to be played on the grass. Right? It's going to be played on the grass. And let's go.
So that, I mean, that got edited down a little bit, but that was the gist of it. And I'm like, okay, cool. It sounds like every other locker room speech I've ever heard. And some people were out there going, oh, wow, there was a definite tone to that. And some people were implying racism. And I'm like, how do you say that with your head all the way up your backside? Are you serious? Are you serious? That sounds like every other speech I've ever heard. He said they're fighting for clicks, and he's talking about Hollywood because the celebrities are out to watch him. I mean, there were probably coaches saying the same thing about Pete Carroll at USC when Snoop was coming out to see him, and Will Ferrell's on the sidelines. Yeah. They're probably in the other locker room going, those guys are all about Hollywood, and we're about football. And I mean, that's it was such a nothing thing, yet it took off, Dave. It was nuts how people were responding to it. And then Deion was asked about it after the game, and Deion handled it well, I thought, after the game.
I don't say stuff just to say it for a click, you know, contrary to what some may say. But, I keep receipts. But I'm serious. I analyze and I understand what we're up against and what we have and what we need. One thing that I could say honestly and candidly, you better get me right now. This is the worst we're going to be.
So Good for
I
him.
Hope so for his sake, because 42-6 is a butt whooping there.
But, oh yeah, they got torn up.
But I mean, coming after off of, you know, really handling Nebraska, certainly going to TCU, and you know, they've won three times as many games as they won last year. But yeah, I'm just very curious to see, because now you got USC coming up, and they're number 8 in the nation. Got a really good quarterback in Caleb Williams, and yeah, I'll be curious to see. I mean, I'm still going to follow them.
Oh, yeah.
No matter what.
Like, yeah.
And it is kind of for the clicks. I mean, I want to see what he says. I want to see, you know, what next controversial thing that he comes up with. So, yeah.
I think he's great for the game, man. He's got eyes on a program that would be ignored outside of alums and family members and blood. We wouldn't be mentioning Colorado right now. Wouldn't even be a mention. And they are the story. They are the face. He's the face. He's nothing but good for college football, in my opinion. But I just, the reaction to Lanning, I thought was odd, to say the very least. Like, wait, you took that out of, that's what you took out of it? Really? It was really weird. It was really, really weird.
Well, I think coaches are just, they're trying to find any way possible. They're coaching up a bunch of young kids that are kind of into that. And so anything they can find, you know, to get that done. Like I said, Joe Sellers used to just make things up.
Laughable. I'm guessing he's not unique. I'm guessing that happens from junior high, high school, college to the pros. I'm guessing it happens. So there you go. Big weekend of college football. Meanwhile, we'll get the latest injury updates and everything else from Pete Carroll. His Monday press conference is coming your way next. It's Wyman and Bob on the exclusive home of the Mariners playoff chase, Seattle Sports, and the Seattle Sports app.